Welcome to Your Life and Legacy. I'm your host, Christopher Nudo. On this show, we explore how faith, family, and values shape the legacy we leave behind. Today's conversation centers on one of life's toughest realities, caring for the people we love most. Joining me is Hillary Bailey, the founder of Freedom Caregivers and Companions. She's a licensed physical therapist assistant who began her career treating patients before moving into management and home health. It was in the homes of seniors that she discovered her passion for the geriatric community, which ultimately inspired her to start her own home care agency. Hillary, like I've told you before, I'm really, really glad you're here and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Family caregiving can turn really love into conflict. We've all experienced this. And siblings can disagree about decisions, leaving one person stuck in the middle and, you know, really finding peace in the family out of reach. So, you know, in those situations that you've taken on, how do you really control the conflict and the emotions within the family setting?
Well, that can be difficult in many situations. So for me, as the owner of a home care agency, my first question is always, who's the power of attorney, the medical power of attorney, because that's who we're going to speak to. So that keeps me out of a lot of the conflict. But what I try to, you know, what I try to tell people like siblings is, let's keep our eye on exactly what we're doing here. Like, what is the goal? Who are we caring for? Are we caring for mom? Okay, what are we trying to accomplish in caring for mom? We want the best for her. We want to make the decisions. You want to talk with her. Does she want to stay at home? Does she want to go to an assisted living? You know, let's sit down, talk with her, and make it about her and not about us. I feel like a lot of times the conflict that comes between siblings is we all think we know the answer. We all think we know what's best for our loved one. And we all have different ideas on how to care for people, right? One sibling may think they might do better in assisted living, and another sibling may feel like they, you know, would do better at home. We all have different ideas, and it's really just about, again, bringing the focus back to the person that you're taking care of and what do they want, what's best for them, and let's stop making it about us.
And what are really some of the conflicts that are the most difficult ones to deal with? Do they deal with money? Do they deal with care? Do they, you know, what does it deal with? Honestly, pride. Like, I want to be the one making the decisions.
Oh, it's ego. That's the number one ego. You know, when you have a lot of siblings, I've got several families that have, you know, 6 to 8 siblings. Like I said, everybody's got a different idea and mine is the best. And this is what I think is best for mom. And this is what, you know, I want to do. Again, that's lucky for me. I get to go back to the medical power of attorney, but, you know, also it can be financial. There's no easy way to say this, but I have been put in situations where, a client may have money for 24-hour care in their home, but their children are worried about what's going to be left over for them.
Yeah, I believe that.
That is just that's just part of it. So yes, it can be financial, and it can also be financial to the point to where, you know, if the loved one doesn't even have the finances to take care of themselves in the manner that they want to be cared for, whether that be at home or in assisted living, sometimes, you know, siblings have to their children have to pitch in, you know, so that can put a financial strain on them. And then maybe you have one sibling who is not able to help financially, and then this one's carrying the burden. That can also start, you know, more conflict between families.
I'm sensing that logic doesn't always prevail, that feelings are sometimes the element that rules the roost, if you would. And as you and I know, feelings are just that, but, you know, the facts really are much better at helping people make decisions. Because you're not family, but yet you're caring, I sense that you are probably in the middle, right? You're, you know, how do you find yourself not being stuck between brother and sister and navigating that challenge?
Very clear from the very beginning, if because you can always tell when I get a phone call from someone, if there is family drama, if there's more than one sibling or more than one person that's trying to make the decision, someone always tells me about that before I step in into the situation. I feel like sometimes they even try to sway me to maybe listen to them more than I listen to the other person.
Right.
So I'm just very clear up front. Honesty is the best policy. And I just let them know, like, look, number one, who's the medical power of attorney? That is who I will be taking direction from. You can have your opinions and you guys can discuss that as a family, but myself nor my caregivers will be getting involved in any of that's going on. And I make that very clear. Do not involve me in your drama and don't involve my caregivers in your drama.
What do you do? What do you do though if like the decision maker is not making good decisions?
You know, that's tough. Because legally I have to do what they're telling me to do. I can definitely make suggestions if I feel like something can be done better. And most of the time, people are open to hearing that because they're in a stressful situation. They're trying, you know. Not we can't all make the best choices because we just don't know. So I can, you know, I offer suggestions, I offer my advice, and most of the time, you know, they'll listen to me, which is nice. But yeah,
you are the expert.
Yes, I am.
So what are some of the things you do to really bring peace to the family, to minimize or really try to avoid conflict?
Bring them back to what the focus should be. Bring it back to your loved one, right? Try to talk with them about, like, let's take out, you know, our feelings, right? Because feelings aren't facts, but we can get heated and feelings are, you know, at the forefront. Everybody's emotional when things like this are going on. So I just try to tell them, like, hey, let's bring it back. And, you know, sometimes you have to bring in someone that's neutral. Like if they're on home health or hospice, we have social workers or people like you, lawyers that we can bring in to kind of mediate the conversation so we can stay on the facts. We can quit getting out in the weeds about feelings and what's going on. And we can stay here, talk about mom or dad, and let's talk about what we need to do for them.
Great. And that is a perfect segue because up next, we're going to talk about the unique pressures of the sandwich generation, caring for your parents while still raising your own kids. Welcome back to Your Life and Legacy. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Your Life and Legacy and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move? You can also catch the podcast version right from our website at nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready wherever you are. I'm here with Hillary Bailey, the founder of Freedom Caregivers and Companions. In this segment, we're looking at what's called the sandwich generation. People raising kids while also caring for their aging parents. It's a double responsibility that can leave people, well, stretched impossibly thin. Many families feel like they're being pulled in two directions with little time left for themselves. I can honestly relate to that. The challenge is finding balance while still showing love to both generations. Hillary, for families who want to learn more about the kind of work you do and where can they really connect with you?
Well, first they can go to my website, which is freedomcaregivers.net. They can find out all about my company, or they can give us a call at 346-468-1000. I love to tell people that, you know, I love to just be a resource. So even if maybe you're not looking for care and you just need someone to talk to that's been there, that maybe you need some ideas about some stuff, I love being a resource for people. So just give me a call if you have some questions.
I love that. So in this segment now, we're going to dissect this thing called the sandwich generation. And I can't help but have this big submarine sandwich in my head with all kinds of Italian meats and stuff on it. But we'll move on from that thought. And I can also relate to it as having parents in my 80s and kids in their 20s and trying to navigate what feels like the same world, but generations apart. Tell me about this generation and what advice can we give them to get started in this topic?
Well, let me tell you, in about 10 years, you're going to have, you know, these millennials are going to be in the sandwich generation. I actually talked about this on my show a little bit yesterday. You know, we're living a lot longer. We're living into our 80s and 90s. You know, we are having children later in life. We're no longer, you know, popping out our kids in our 20s. We're having them in our late 30s and sometimes early 40s. So you're about to have a group of people who are going to have toddlers and aging parents, which
scary thought for me anyway.
You know, because I have aging parents and my girls are in their 20s, which so it makes it a little easier for me because they're off on their own. But if you're trying to raise a toddler and take care of an 80-year-old parent, that's going to be, you know, much different. So I guess the biggest piece of advice I would give people is to just let them know right up front, you're not going to do it perfectly. You have to remember that you are not a machine. You are a human being and you're not going to do it perfectly. You need to be clear and set boundaries on both sides. So if you have a spouse, hey, we need to sit down and talk. I have to help take care of my parents on, you know, these days. I'm going to need you to handle the kiddos so I can go over here and handle my parents. And you're going to need to set boundaries, you know, with your parents as well, or your loved ones, whomever it is you're taking care of. Hey, I can commit to, you know, two doctor's appointments a week and one grocery run per week. That's personally what I can commit to. And then we need to figure out how to get the rest of their needs met. Self-care. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, if you know, my wife's going to listen to this and she's going to be like, you should have called Hillary when you were going through this. Because it's true. Setting those boundaries with everyone, not just your wife, but your kids, your siblings, your parents. And so often we don't set those boundaries because of our family history. One of the things I want to ask you about is, you know, I often see, and I want to hear from you, the caregiver themselves is the one who takes the greatest emotional and physical impact from how they're being stretched. How do you help these people?
Again, setting the boundaries, that's number one. Self-care, that is so huge, and reaching out for help, whether that, you know, and I want to speak to the people who have people in their lives too who are caregivers. Don't ask people what they need, just do it. Don't say, well, just let me know if I can help you, because they're not going to say that. Take them a meal. Ask them if you can go grocery shopping for them. Ask them if you can come sit with their loved ones so they can go to the movies. Don't ask them what you can do for them. Just do it.
Secondly, that's great advice, because people won't ask.
No, they won't, because they feel like it makes them look weak in this, like, oh, this is my responsibility. I have to hold on to it. No, we have to. But again, let's flip it to the caregiver too. We have to learn to ask for help. We can't just sit there and be, you know, burning down on the inside and then say, well, I'm just so exhausted. Well, we do need to open our mouths and learn how to ask for help. And again, going to the people you're close to. Or having an outlet to vent is also, you know, I have some family members that will just call me sometimes just to say, I need to say this to someone who I know is going to understand, and I won't feel like I'm being judged for saying, this is hard. What I'm doing is hard. It's not easy. And I know that it's not easy. Support groups. There are not enough caregiver support groups. That is on my list of things to do this year. I want to start a caregiver support group in my area. They're underutilized. And I don't know what the stigma is with support groups. I love support groups. I think they're huge. I don't know if it's the same in Chicago, but here in Texas, it's like, oh, go to a support group. That means I'm a weakling. No, it doesn't.
Or do they just not have time for one more thing? You know, I could see people, a caregiver saying that. Really? You want me now to go to a support group too? Because, you know, but I agree with you in that a support group is really will give them the freedom and outlet and environment they need so they can make good choices for their loved ones.
Well, and it gives ideas. Different ideas. Everybody has a great idea that maybe they're doing with their loved one that maybe you've never thought about that might make your life 50 times easier. You know, it's just talking to other people.
Unpack for me I'm going to go back to where you talked about self-care. Unpack self-care for us so people understand what some of those elements are.
I think people forget first and foremost about self-compassion. Getting yourself grace. Again, you're not going to do everything perfectly. And I think caregivers are really hard on themselves. And I think they need to show themselves more grace. And that's a huge part of self-care. And yeah, self-care is a support group too. That is a form of self-care. Self-care can be just going outside and sitting in the sun for 10 minutes. It can be taking a short vacation, you know, getting some respite care from a caregiving agency or someone in your family. It can be going to the movies. It can be, there's whatever you love to do, whatever brings you joy, because if you don't have joy, you're going to be miserable all the time.
Right. I agree.
Grace, showing yourself grace as a caregiver is huge. You have to give yourself some grace.
We're going to talk about that. And we're going to go to faith. We're going to talk about grace, and we're going to talk about navigating medical systems and how caregivers can keep hope alive when the process feels totally overwhelming. Welcome back to Your Life and Legacy. I'm here with Hillary Bailey, and we're addressing an issue every caregiver knows all too well, navigating the medical system. Doctors, hospitals, and endless paperwork can leave families feeling like they're just a number instead of a person. The healthcare system can feel overwhelming and impersonal, making caregivers question if they are really even being heard. The challenge is finding strength and hope in the middle of this chaos. And, you know, what I need to know from you, Hillary, is what makes the medical system so difficult for families to navigate?
There's such a long list of things. So number one, you know, back in the day, we went to one doctor, and that one doctor treated pretty much anything and everything that we needed to be treated. But we have so many doctors. There's heart doctors and lung doctors and neurologists for our brains and, you know, dermatologists for our skin. And they since the doctors only focus on one thing, that means that we have multiple doctors that we have to go see. Number two, not all doctors, but most doctors don't communicate. Their offices don't communicate very well. So that leaves it up to the caregivers to keep notes. And when they go to this doctor, oh, wait, well, they're on this medicine. Is it okay for them to be on this medication as well? So the communication can be difficult. Also, you know, in the defense of the doctors, because of, you know, budget cuts and with insurances, and sometimes they don't cover this and cover that. I mean, you know, they come out of school with all this debt, and then they've got to see this, you know, 100 patients a day to, you know, make any money and pay back their loans. And so they feel rushed to, you know, talk with patients. I think that's why today you see so many of these functional medicine doctors popping up that pay take cash, because they can spend as much time as they want. So I just think it's doctors, you know, doctors are rushed. There's too many doctors. There's too much information. It's too much is put on the caregiver and the patients to try to deal with that used to be dealt with in the doctor's office, but it's just not anymore. And everything's electronic. That's hard for seniors.
It is, right.
Yeah. It's hard for seniors. So
what I find is that in days gone by, I'm trying not to say the olden days, but in days gone by, you had advocates for you, right? Your doctor was an advocate for your health, you know, and other people were advocates that helped you guide your life. And what I've been finding and what I need to know from you is, has the caregiver now really become the advocate for the person they're taking care of, trying to balance, you know, the doctor and the insurance companies and the various doctors, you know, whether it would be the orthopedic and the heart doctor and the neurologist, and like where's the one central person that has to hold all this together?
That today is the caregiver. I think that, you know, medical systems, like let's say for instance Methodist, you know, every hospital system or doctor's office system, they have some kind of portal, you know, that you can log into and you can keep all your stuff there. And that's where they put all their notes and everything like that. But again, that stuff is hard for seniors. So it has really fallen on the caregivers. But there, you know, there are some things that they can do to make it easier. First and foremost, I love to tell my clients' families about this. My husband actually turned me on to it. He uses it for his business, but it's like an AI recorder that you can turn on and record a conversation. And then at the end, it will literally type out that conversation, like the highlights, what the doctor said, what you said. That's huge. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of AI.
What's the name of that? Can we share that with our viewers?
You know, I don't know the name of it. I will have to get it for you. I keep it somewhere, but I don't want to have to look for it right now. But I will maybe get it to you and you can share it on your website or something. But yeah, no, it's wonderful. It's really helpful. Keeping records separate for each doctor, like in one of those accordion folders, is very good. Also keeping a list of medications. That way you can take that to every single doctor's appointment, because they're always going to ask you for a copy anyway, because they want to know, you know, what medications you're on so they can prescribe the right. They don't do anything that, you know, interferes, you know, with one another. But like I was saying, there are, you know, there are RNs out there that are retired, that they kind of start their own little business and they just become advocates for people who like maybe don't have family members, and they pay them and they go to the doctor's offices with them. And help them navigate this healthcare system. Also, I find usually, this has been my experience, there's usually one wonderful person at your doctor's office or at the hospital that you can get a relationship with. You can cultivate that relationship with them, and they can be your point person. And ask, when you go to see a doctor, ask as the caregiver, you know, let your voice be heard. Say, Who here can I speak to if I do not understand what the doctor told me, or if I need it, you know, talked about in simpler terms? Or when you're sitting in there with the doctor, ask. For me, it's easy for me to speak up and ask questions because it's what I do. But for other people, they think, oh, he's a doctor. He's really busy. No, you're paying, your insurance is paying for you to be there. Open your mouth, say, I don't understand what you're saying. I need you to clarify this to someone who hasn't gone to medical school that doesn't know what you're talking about. I have an experience with this. My mom has MS. Took her to the neurologist. We came in. She had had an MRI. The doctor came in, held it up in front of us and said, you see this? You have multiple sclerosis. Didn't explain to my mom what it was. Didn't try to explain to her like what the progression is, like what we might need to do, what, you know, what happened. And it was horrible. It was absolutely. And luckily I'm in the medical profession to know what that is and could explain it. But, you know, I had to speak up and say, we need to know a little bit more here, ma'am. You know, like, tell us, we need more information. Obviously we didn't stick with that neurologist. We went to a specialist, but still, you have to, you can't be afraid of doctors just because they're doctors. Yes. Respect them. They're wonderful. They know a lot, but open your mouth and ask what you need to ask to have stuff clarified for your loved one, because that's who you're there for.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that those who don't, those they don't know how to advocate or the questions to ask, because my wife would be a much better questioner with the doctors because she's in the medical field herself. But for those of us that are not in the medical field, we're not very good at questions because we're expecting the medical professional to be providing, to know what the questions are and to be providing the answers without us having to ask. And that can be a rather frustrating experience. So.
Yeah.
Right.
I would definitely say ask him to reframe the answer to where you can understand, or ask. Sometimes the nurses are amazing people, and they sometimes are better at explaining things where we can understand them, since we don't have medical degrees.
And I loved your idea about the retired nurses who are helping people out there. What a fabulous thing. I'd like to even figure out where that is in the Chicago market here. Listen, don't go away. Up next, we'll dive into one of the most stressful moments caregivers face, medical emergencies and how to prepare for them. Welcome back to Your Life and Legacy. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand wherever and whenever you want. Grab your free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of both bilingual programs in English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to Your Life and Legacy anytime on Now Media TV website at nowmedia.tv. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more, Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. Well, unfortunately, we're closing today's conversation with Hillary Bailey by talking about one of the most hardest moments for caregivers, when a family emergency happens suddenly. Panic sets in, and the family often really doesn't know what to do. You know, emergencies bring fear, chaos, and the family really needs to be prepared for decisions that they can make for their loved ones. So, Hillary, first tell us why medical emergencies are so emotionally crushing to the family.
I think for the caregivers in particular, it brings up, maybe like you talked about just a second ago, fear. What did I not do? Did I not do something correct? Is this why this is happening? It may just be a progression of their disease, but they immediately go inward with it and they take responsibility for it when they may have obviously nothing to do with it. It's just what's going on with their loved ones. And then sometimes just the suddenness of it. Maybe everything's been going well for a couple of days or a couple of months, however long. And then all of a sudden we have this new issue that has arise again. And now it brings up the advocacy thing again. I'm going to have to advocate one more time for my loved one. And that's exhausting. Talking about it earlier, it's actually exhausting. And the loss of control. What do I do in this situation? I felt like I had everything under control. Mom was doing well. Her blood pressure was good. And now we're having chest pains, right? What do I do now? Now I don't have control of the situation and I have no idea what to do. So.
What can families, so in that vein, so to try and minimize the drama that comes in these emergencies, what practical steps can families take today to make these emergencies less stressful?
Number one, get your paperwork in order with your wishes. Talk to whomever your medical power of attorney is. Let them know what your wishes are. Put it in your living will. Do you want a DNR? Do you not want a DNR? Know the difference between an out-of-hospital DNR and a regular DNR. Educate yourself on the paperwork and get that set up so your family knows what you want. That is number one. That you and I have talked about that before on my show. Like, that is huge. Call Chris. Get your paperwork set up. Number one. You can, as a caregiver, I always recommend to my family caregivers that they get CPR certified. That's a huge skill to have. That is a huge skill to have. And know what you want to do first. Pause, take a deep breath, always call on. I always tell my family, if you know, they're like, well, I don't know if I should take them to the emergency room. Call 911 no matter what. That's what I tell my family members. Because then if something happens, they're either on their way out there or when they get there, they can check them out. I always say that. Call 911. You better be rather be safe than sorry. But what I like to tell people too is take a breath, right? 5 to 10 seconds. Take a deep breath in. Take a deep breath out. That will switch our emotional brain over to our thinking brain. Okay, what do we need to do? Because that panic does set in, you know, our adrenaline rushes. We have a million thoughts going through our head about what we need to do. 5 to 10 seconds, deep breath in, deep breath out. What is the next step? And for most people, if it's a medical emergency, call 911 and they'll usually help you and tell you what to do.
Which makes perfect sense. And they're going to err on the more conservative side. So like you said, you can't really make a mistake by calling 911 because you are providing the greatest amount of care for the situation, whether it needs it or not. And like you just said, let's err on the side of getting the care. So there's this concept that I've been hearing about. It's called having an emergency plan. And so tell me about, like, do your caregivers establish an emergency plan ahead of time with the people that you're taking care of?
We absolutely do. And because we're licensed by the state of Texas, ours is, it's pretty advanced. So number one, all of our clients get, assigned a level of emergency preparedness level. So we have three levels. So that kind of tells us, like, if we have a client that's level two, like say there's a natural disaster, we're going to look at our level two clients first to see if we can get to them first, because they're the ones that require our care the most. Level four, that's going to be like, hey, you're able to go about 72 hours without our care. You're able to walk and take yourself to the restroom. So we're not going to get out to you. But we make sure that we talk with the families, like, and we set that in place. Like, if this happens, if the client, you know, if they stop breathing, you know, is that DNR in place? Where is it? Post it on the wall. Do they want to be, again, do they want to be resuscitated? Do you want us to perform CPR? Some people they don't want us to perform CPR, even if they don't have a DNR. They just say call 911 and have them, you know, take care of it. So really it's, we look at their diagnoses, like what their home looks like, and just kind of what their wishes are. And that's, you know, given to the caregiver from there.
And how receptive are caregivers to all of this information? How many times do you have a caregiver say to themselves, oh, Hillary, you just don't understand. I mean, I work full time. I have to take the kids to soccer, dance, piano lessons. And my mom, she calls me like six times every hour. And now we have to sit down and make a plan, and I have to take them to an attorney's office and get all these documents. And oh my gosh, like I just don't know if I can do this, Hillary.
So that's where I do a lot of networking in my area. And that is, I have a list of people that I have vetted. I have an attorney here that will go to their home. She doesn't care what time it is, you know? And so I will recommend her. I know you don't have time. Let her come to you.
We've all found ourselves, those of us in the sandwich generation, in the middle of a crisis, right? Dad has fallen and can't get up and we need to call 911 and we haven't made a plan for dad because he's got nine steps to go up to his bedroom. He's got four steps to go down to his den and he can't walk anymore. And now, and mom doesn't want to go to wherever dad's going to be. And so we have this family in turmoil. A crisis. How do we help that family?
Sitting down with them. That I think that would definitely be a time where I can always offer, you know, the information that I have. But I also have, again, in my networking, there are senior placement advisors. I don't know if you've heard of people like that, that will come out and discuss with a family kind of what's going on, and they can also point them in the right direction. Again, the RNs are wonderful at this because we have to say, okay, because sometimes we always want to do what our family members want, but finances are always involved. If they have enough money to do whatever they want, great. We'll send mom wherever she wants to go. We'll leave her here with 24-hour care. We'll put dad over here. But if they don't, you have to consider those things and what's going to work for them financially. I try when I do sit down with them, again, let's take a breath. Let's get grounded. I know we want to do everything our loved ones want, but what is it that they actually need and is going to help them?
And that often comes up, right? Like, you know, What one wants or thinks they want versus what's best for them sometimes don't come together. And let me guess, that's when you or the caregiver have to exercise some tough love.
Yes. And unfortunately, you know, they don't sometimes want to listen to us. And with you have an older couple who haven't, you know, given their children medical power of attorney. They're each other's power of attorney. If one of them is still within their right mind and they can make decisions, whether or not those decisions are safe. I've had that happen in my agency where I had a husband that was not making good choices for his wife, and his kids can't get involved. They don't have any power. So, you know, unfortunately, because of the oath that we take, we have to call Adult Protective Services and they have to.
Yes. Involved. Makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to be wrapping up this segment here in a minute, but it's really important to me, Hillary, that people know how to continue this conversation with you. So remind them again, the best place to be able to connect with you.
You can go on our website, which is freedomcaregivers.net, or you can give us a call 346-468-1000. That number is answered 24/7, obviously, for our clients that may need us. But again, please use me as a resource. I have lots of experience and information and experience to share. And so if I can just be a listening ear for you or point you in the right direction, we would love to do that.
Hillary, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. You've reminded us that while caregiving is filled with challenges, it's also a journey of love, faith, and resilience. For our viewers, remember this conflict doesn't have to divide us. Balance is possible even in busy seasons. Hope can carry us through overwhelming times, and preparation makes emergencies less frightening. These lessons shape the legacies we leave for our families. I'm Christopher Nudo, and this has been Your Life and Legacy. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, live with purpose and lead with love.